I'm John Aran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Good morning, Washington, D.C. Welcome back. I'm Adam Epstein. You're listening to AWOD Radio here on D.C. Sports Radio, 106.7 The Fan. Got you covered on both ends of the dial. We're simulcast on the Team 980 AM, and always available on the go with the Odyssey app. Joining us right now is a very special guest on the BetQL guest hotline. Sports betting has come to Maryland. Don't place that first bet without checking with BetQL, because they analyze every game from every sport to find you the most profitable betting opportunities. You can get 3 free days of BetQL access by downloading the BetQL app or visiting BetQL.com. On the BetQL guest hotline is Chase Hughes from Monumental Sports. What's going on, Chase?
Not much, man. Doing great. I hope you had a good 4th of July.
I did, man. And let me start with this, because I opened the show, my second segment, talking about the Avengers in Vegas getting ready for the Summer Olympics. What do you think of the team, LeBron James, Steph Curry? Are they going to have the chemistry to get it done in Paris, France?
I think so. Also, Joel Embiid, which is crazy. He could have chosen between several different countries, decided to play for the U.S. So they're absolutely stacked. I'm looking forward to seeing Steph Curry play in that setting for the first time. And, you know, France is going to be a real threat, I think, in the long term. They won silver last time around. And, of course, they've got Victor Wembanyama. But Bilal Coulibaly told it to me this year. He said it's not this year's Olympics, which are actually in Paris, that France has their best chance to win gold. It's 4 years from now, because they just had the number one and number two pick in the NBA draft. They'll still have Rudy Gobert. Victor Wembanyama and Bilal Coulibaly will be in their primes as NBA players. So I think it's still the U.S.'s gold to lose, but we'll see 4 years from now.
So what is the latest with Bilal Coulibaly getting playing time with Team France right now?
Yeah, so they're going through their exhibition schedule right now, and he's looking great. I mean, I've seen some of the highlights, making plays on both ends of the floor, as we're used to seeing him do when he played with the Wizards last year. But they still got a few more cuts to make, so we'll see. It's not official yet, but I would say his chances are looking pretty good. Victor Wembanyama, some of the highlights have been unbelievable. I mean, we saw it last year in the NBA, but now he's going up against lesser competition. You know, they played against Turkey, but they were missing most of their best players, including Alperen Şengün of the Houston Rockets, who's a really good young player. So I think they won by like 60 points, and Victor Wembanyama was blocking every shot and throwing down crazy alley-oops, but Bilal was making some plays as well.
Well, this is going to be a really good experience for him, and it's definitely an excused absence to miss Summer League in Vegas. So give us your thoughts on the roster, and we'll start with this. Give us some names that the fans might not know, because we're obviously going to know the 3 first-rounders.
Yeah, so the Wizards have not put their roster out there yet. Okay. I would say at this point probably more than half of the league has, so I would expect to be out in the next couple of days. But we
know, because isn't the first game in 6 days?
Yeah, right. I know. I think they're just putting together the final details of it. But we do know, of course, they're going to have their 3 first-round picks from this year. So either way, no matter how they fill it out, their roster is going to be stacked. Like, I've watched the Summer League for a very long time. And it's very rare that you see the Wizards in particular have 3 first-round picks on the same roster, plus their 2nd-round pick from last year, Tristan Vukcevic. So we'll see Alex Saar, Bub Carrington, and Keyshawn George on the roster. And so I think it's going to be really fun to watch. And the matchups are great. I mean, anytime you have a top draft pick, the Summer League schedule is going to be one that puts you up against the best teams and the best players. So, the Wizards had the 2nd overall pick, Alex Saar. So on opening night, they'll go up against the Hawks and Zachary Risacher, who was the number 1 overall pick. And then in the 2nd game, they'll play the Rockets. who have Reed Sheppard, who was the third overall pick. And then I think maybe the most interesting matchup will be when they play their third game against the Blazers, because Portland has Donovan Clingan of UConn, who of course won the championship last year. He was the anchor of their defense each of the last two seasons when they won titles. And he's a center. So is Alex Saar. So those guys will go up against each other, the number two versus the number seven pick, the two best centers in the draft. So I'm going to be excited for that one for sure.
Chase Hughes with us here on the BetQL Guest Hotline, covering the Wizards for Monumental Sports Network. So we're all excited about Alexander Saar and to see him for the first time here in Summer League. But I kind of think we're all going to be talking about Bub Carrington. Tell us what you know about Bub and what you're expecting, because I think he could go off for like 25 in a game. He's just a guy that really heats up, and I think Saar's going to be the one we're focused on, but I think when you look at the box score, Bub Carrington's going to stand out.
Yeah, I think the Wizards were really excited to get him in the draft. Of course, they had to make a trade to get the 14th overall pick. They added a third first-round pick, and were able to come away with the best local player in the draft, because Bub Carrington is from Baltimore. He grew up not far away. He went to Pitt last year and played one season in college and is only 18 years old, but was one of the best players in the country at shooting off the dribble. He's really, really good at creating his own shot off the dribble. Pretty good three-point shooter, only shot 32% from three for the season last year, but as Will Dawkins mentioned on draft night, and it checks out if you look at his game logs, he finished the year really strong from three. It was about the last third of the season he shot 40% from three. So his ability to create his own shot off the dribble is something that most players take many years to be able to develop, but he's already got that. So I think they're really excited about that. He's also 6'4", and that's without shoes, and he's a point guard, so he's a very big point guard. Might play some off the ball as well early in his career, but I think you're right about looking ahead to him playing in the summer league, because he's probably going to be running their offense, and he's probably going to have the ball in his hands a lot. And because of his skill set, I wouldn't be surprised if he had a big summer league and turned some heads, for sure.
You know, a lot of teams are using the opportunity with summer league to give somebody an opportunity at coaching. You know, the Spurs made headlines with their young, you know, video coordinator that's now getting an opportunity. Do you know what the Wizards are going to do with coaching the summer league? And how much is Brian Keith going to be involved?
Yeah, I'm sure Brian Keith will be there. He will be there, and I'm sure he'll be helping him out in practices, but it sounds like it'll be Cody Toppert, who coached the Capital City Go-Go last year, who is a former professional player overseas. That was reported by The Athletic. He did a really good job coaching the Go-Go last year and has kind of remained in their coaching pipeline, and I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, someday he's an assistant coach at the NBA level, maybe even a head coach. They really like the job that he did last year, so he'll be the head coach of their summer league team. It won't be quite like the Spurs. That is an amazing story, by the way. That guy's only 31 years old. He started out as a ball boy. He was an equipment guy for like 6 years and then became a coaching assistant. And now he's an assistant coach in the NBA. I mean, you just don't see that very often.
What would you say is Alex Saar's biggest weakness he'll be working on in summer league?
Ooh, that's a good question. Biggest weakness, I'd probably say, you know, they've said that, I don't know if it's his biggest weakness, but Will Dawkins said that he needs to improve his rebounding. And, you know, if that is a skill that kind of lags behind a little bit, then it could be magnified once he gets to the NBA, of course, because, you know, he's going to be a big man and the Wizards need him to rebound. They were a bad rebounding team last year. You know, besides sort of the normal things that young players have to go through, learning how to, you know, create their own shot and make shots at the NBA level, I would probably say rebounding, because it's going to be an important part of his job.
And then Keyshawn George, we haven't talked about him yet, the third first-round draft pick that the Wizards selected out of Miami. We know he's a good shooter. What else can you tell us about his game?
Well, he's also very big. He's 6'7 without shoes. He's got a 6'10 wingspan. So, you know, when you watch him in college, it's not just the ability to shoot from three, but just shooting over defenders was something that you saw pretty consistently from him. He's also got pretty good feel off the dribble. I think he's mostly a catch-and-shoot guy. So shooting 40% from three is pretty impressive, and especially for a guy like him who had a huge growth spurt in high school. So he's not really used to playing on the wing. He was more so a guard throughout his high school career. And then he had this huge growth spurt. I think when he signed to play for Jim Larrañaga at Miami, he was like 6'4", 6'5", and then he grew another 3 inches before he arrived on campus. So he's one of those guys who's kind of growing into his body. But the shooting is something that should be able to play right away. And then I think long-term they like his defensive versatility, especially because of the length that he has and also his ability to expand his offensive game beyond just shooting from three.
It is Chase Hughes with us here on the BetQL Guest Hotline talking all things Washington Wizards. I wanted to bring up Candace Buckner's article, "The Truth in Young Talent Will Set the Wizards Free." President Michael Winger and Will Dawkins, the general manager, are not confusing fans with delusions of competing for that ninth play-in seed. And I do feel like my perspective is this fan base is kind of bought in on this slow rebuild. And I think it's because of how transparent they've been with how long this may take, with their three first-round draft picks. Do you feel like this fan base is built in, is bought into this rebuild, even if it takes 3, 4, 5 years?
I think so. I mean, you know, Ted Leonsis said this early last season in an interview with my colleague, Megan McPeak, that, you know, this is what the fans wanted. They wanted a rebuild. And, you know, of course, the Wizards had kind of been spinning their wheels for years. They went through a rebuild and got John Wall and Bradley Beal and Otto Porter and ended up going to the second round 3 times in 4 years, I believe it was. And, you know, that was a pretty successful run, but it obviously had maxed out. And, you know, it involved injuries and contracts that didn't work out. And the Wizards were picking late in the lottery, and it just wasn't working for them. So I think fans just wanted a new direction, and that's what they've sort of undergone. You know, we'll see where it goes. I think, you know, they're still very much in the early stages. And whenever you go through something like this, it's going to take time to really evaluate the draft picks that they made. Obviously, those are very important if you're building through the draft. You know, can they develop and draft their own players? How do things work out in terms of timing? You know, when they get the players that they need to someday contend and how that matches up with the timeline of the veterans on their roster. But, you know, they're only about a year into this. They've made draft picks in 2 drafts. It's probably going to take at least 3 or 4 drafts before they have the foundation and they can move forward. So, very early on, but I would agree that fans seem to be very much bought in because a lot of them were asking for this.
Yeah, and if the fans aren't in for the rebuild, I would just say, look at how screwed the Phoenix Suns are. Thank goodness we got Bradley Beal's contract out of the way here. Can you one more time, Chase, for the audience, explain the draft pick situation with the top 10 protected pick?
Yeah, so the Wizards still owe a first-round pick that is tied to the John Wall Russell Westbrook trade, which was made in December of 2020. They attached a heavily protected first round pick to John Wall to get Russell Westbrook, and that pick still hasn't conveyed. And it's been passed around the league a little bit, but right now it's owned by the New York Knicks. And basically, it's got 2 more years of first round protections. This coming season, if the Wizards, as long as they pick in the top 10, then they don't have to give the pick to the New York Knicks. The year after that, they've got to pick in the top 8 to keep it. And if they pick top 10 next year and top 8 the year after that, then it becomes 2 second-round picks and it's not as big of a worry. But obviously, you don't want to give up a first-round pick, especially a lottery pick if it ended up falling in that range, and especially during a time where you're trying to build through the draft. So it's definitely an important consideration for them.
Yeah, if the Wizards win too many games to get a pick outside of the top 10, it's a failure by management, in my opinion. Chase, really appreciate you taking the time, man. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Have a great weekend.
You're listening to A-Wad Radio here on DC Sports Radio, 106.7 The Fan. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. I'm Adam Epstein. You're listening to AWOD Radio here on DC Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan, simulcast on the Team 980, and always available on the Odyssey app. We're live and local here until 12 noon. And the NBA offseason continues with free agency. And honestly, I don't get any excited about these moves that have happened so far. I think it's a pretty bland offseason. But I'll get into it here with the latest on The Fast Break with AWOD.
Let's go. Let's play some basketball here.
We're going on The Fast Break with AWOD. From buzzer-beating shots to the best highlight plays from around the league, every clutch moment.
Stroking it from three.
The all-stars of the league. We're out in transition. It's a breakaway.
It's good at the buzzer.
It's The Fast Break and AWOD talking all things NBA.
To be honest with you, Donald, I see good management, bad management around the association. And my take has always been they have to be worth the value of their contract. All right? And so it's a little tough these days because contracts have ballooned. Skyrocketed, right? Everybody's getting paid, right? So much money. For example, Franz Wagner, who? Yeah, the brother of Mo Wagner, who played in Washington, the forward for the Magic, Franz Wagner, agreed on a 5-year, $224 million contract extension. A deal that could be worth as much as $269 million over 5 years. What? What? Over 40 a year for a mid player? Average? See what I'm talking about? It's just bad general managing around the league. Caleb Martin agreed to a deal with the Philadelphia 76ers. The Sixers also signed Paul George. I don't think that does enough to put them over the hump in the Eastern Conference. Basically, my entire take of free agency is nobody has done enough to challenge the Boston Celtics. The only team that can beat them, I think, is the Denver Nuggets. And so right now, I'd say you're looking at Nuggets-Celtics next year in the NBA Finals. You had Buddy Hield agreed to join the Golden State Warriors on a sign-and-trade. 2 years, $21 million. Is Buddy Hield going to take the Warriors over the top? No, I don't think so. Is he a good replacement for Klay Thompson? You know, maybe. I think he's going to have similar production to Klay the last few years. Klay was the big signing of the offseason with the Dallas Mavericks. Does that put them over the top in the West? I don't think so. You see what I'm saying, Donald? Like, did anybody in either conference make a move that's going to put them ahead of the teams that went to the finals this year? And I get it. I'm saying the Dallas Mavericks, but I don't think they're going to repeat as Western Conference champions.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Yeah, these contracts are definitely crazy. But yeah, so far, no moves have been made that have been so catastrophic that it's really changing the NBA landscape.
Right.
I would say, I guess the biggest move is Klay to the Mavs, and the Mavs just made it to the finals. But I'm with you. I mean, you still got the Timberwolves. I mean, the West in general is just tough. So it's going to be a tough road with them, regardless of the Klay
right.
signing.
Well, you mentioned the Timberwolves, right? So they make it to the Western Conference Finals after defeating the Nuggets. They lose to the Dallas Mavericks. They need an acquisition this offseason. They signed forward Joe Ingles. Like, what? Is that what? Is that going to take over the top, Minnesota? What are you thinking? Joe Ingles? It's just, it's crazy to me. And then I guess we got to get to the other big story in the NBA this offseason, and that's Bronny James and his guaranteed contract with the Lakers. I have no problem with it, but I think the Lakers are just bowing down to LeBron James worse than they ever did to Kobe Bryant, Shaq, or even back to Magic Johnson and Kareem. It's just crazy how LeBron took a max deal, got his son on the contract. They hired his podcast partner as the head coach, and I don't think they're that much better. Like, I don't think the Lakers are going to do much more in the playoffs this year. I think if you're a Lakers fan, here's what I say. I think you should be better during the regular season and win more games with a better coach. Because I do think a lot of regular season games came down to the fact that Darvin Ham didn't know how to draw up a play for an open jump shot. And J.J. Redick, literally playing chess, not checkers, did a podcast, drew plays in front of LeBron. He approved him, and now he's the head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. I believe J.J. Redick is a really good basketball mind, and in terms of play design, I think that's going to help at all a little bit. I don't think that he is a good enough coach to make that much of a difference in terms of the Lakers competing in the Western Conference. Maybe a regular season win here or there because he can draw up better plays. They just don't have enough talent. They really don't. And then the Phoenix Suns are just so screwed here. They're so screwed to the point that they're kind of shopping Kevin Durant right now to, I've seen, Houston and a few other spots. And it's like, but you just acquired Durant. And you just paid Devin Booker and then brought in Bradley Beal for a one-year opportunity in the postseason. And then you get smoked and you're just swept and then you're out and you're going to blow it up. I don't know what's going on there. The Lakers hired Nate McMillan and Scott Brooks, the two top assistants. Scott Brooks, we saw here with Washington, doesn't coach defense. Nate McMillan was with the Hawks. Great offensive team, didn't coach defense. We'll see how the Lakers can improve on the defensive end. But I have no problem with Bronny getting that contract that he got worth $2 million a year. I think it's one of the coolest things in sports to be able to play with your dad. Now, I don't think he's going to play that many games with the actual Lakers and not the G League team, but I'm not a hater on it at all. I hate the Ball family. I don't hate the James family. That's my take with that one.
A quick point on the Lakers real quick that I was thinking of and wanted to ask you, actually. Do you think, like, some of the free agents that still remain out there, like DeMar DeRozan's name's been floated to the Lakers a little bit, but if I'm DeMar or someone like that that's out there, kind of all the points you said about JJ being, you know, LeBron's right-hand man, they pick his son up, you know, they seem to be kind of bowing to LeBron. Do you think that might be deterring some of the free agents or anybody who may possibly be tied to them, like, away? Because maybe they see how much they're catering to LeBron?
Yeah, maybe. I think DeMar DeRozan, I was reading, is going to end up landing in Miami with the Heat, and I can kind of see him fitting the Heat culture as a veteran that just works hard. He's going to hit his open shots. He's going to play defense. I think that, you know, the problem is that doesn't put the Heat over the top in the Eastern Conference or even get him past the Celtics, but I do think that's the move that the Heat should make there. You know, in terms of playing with LeBron, it's a weird situation because, you know, the guys that the Lakers can sign, well, they've got to fit the salary cap contract, right? And so you can't just go out and sign a star. And that's why I thought LeBron was going to take a huge pay cut so that they could get a third star. But he signed with basically the max on a two-year extension. So I just don't see the Lakers have any success with the Wizards. I told you guys, I think it's going to take 4 or 5 years to rebuild. Travis tweets me, AWOD, you know you're my guy, but you're on these airwaves saying it's going to take 4 to 5 years to rebuild. I'm going to be right behind you, reminding you that it doesn't take that long. If a GM says that, he's a scam artist. Look, I'm saying 5 years for the Wizards to contend for the Eastern Conference, all right? They could be in the postseason in 2 years. Now, like we talked about with Chase Hughes, you don't want them in the postseason this year because that means we lost our first-round draft pick to the Knicks. So we need to suck for at least one more year, all right? Get one more first-round draft pick, and then you can start trying to compete for maybe, you know, a 9-10 spot there, play-in game. And then the next year, can we be a 5 seed? And then Alexander Sarr is all of a sudden 23 years old, and he's a budding superstar in this league, and then we can compete for maybe an Eastern Conference Finals. I do think it's going to take 4 or 5 years. For the Commanders, I have it taken 2.5 years, and with the Nats, I'm hoping next year they're in the postseason. We'll talk a little Washington Nationals with Bobby Blanco, who covers the Washington Nationals for Masson Sports. He joins us next on The Fan. Welcome back. I'm Adam Epstein. You're listening to AWOD Radio. Here on DC Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan, your Washington Nationals will continue their homestand today as they take on the St. Louis Cardinals with a 4:05 first pitch. And joining us right now on the BetQL guest hotline, as sports betting has come to Maryland, don't place that first bet without checking with BetQL, because they analyze every game to find you the most profitable betting opportunities. You get 3 free days of BetQL access by downloading the app. On the BetQL guest hotline is Masson Nationals beat reporter Bobby Blanco. What's going on, Bobby?
Morning, Awad. Thanks for having me. How are you?
Absolutely. Let's get right into it. James Wood made his debut against the Washington Nationals on Monday, and they lose in extras. The next day, they lose in extras. 2 wins in a row, and then they lose in extras. What's going on with all this extra inning baseball?
Yeah, the extra innings have not been the Nationals' friend this week. That's 3 losses in extras. At least last night they got it to the 11th and not the 10th. The 10th had been their enemy earlier this week. It's actually been kind of interesting. And I mean, I know the losses aren't fun for anyone, but, you know, you're seeing James Wood come up in big moments in the 9th inning and extra innings, getting on base, you know, one way or the other. In these big moments, and you just kind of figure, you know, if someone else other than Luis Garcia Jr., who's been hot this week, can come up with a clutch hit behind him or in front of him even to put him in a position to drive in a run, this team would have, you know, won maybe 2 or 3 of those games instead of dropping them. But, yeah, the extra innings have been brutal this week, but it has been fun to see James Wood play in all these games, have success in all these games, and then also, you know, come up in big moments late in games and tight ball games.
So I did predict that James Wood getting called up July 4th weekend would lead to an explosion there in attendance. What has it been like this week?
Yeah, I think attendance has been great. I mean, they usually get good attendance this homestand around this time. You know, the holiday weekend is always a good time. Monday's crowd was really good. I was there Wednesday night. That crowd was really good, you know, even though, you know, you get post-game fireworks, but you get James Wood in the game too, you know, guys, people coming in to see him. This is usually a good time of year for the Nationals, no matter how the team is doing, because what's more American, what's a better way to celebrate the 4th of July than go see a ball game in the nation's capital with the sport's best prospect right now?
No, you're so right about that. And, you know, it's been fun watching the Nats this season, but always cool to see them kind of compete here. And even when they lose in extras, right, you know, it's awesome that they're getting it 2 extras, and they're getting James Wood an opportunity, like you're saying, in a big spot. And I think the experience that he's getting so early on in his career is going to help him develop quickly. So what have you seen from James Wood so far? How would you kind of grade his first 5 games in the majors?
Oh, I'm giving him an A for sure. I mean, I think he's done great. I mean, he is what I think is the 2 main things that the Nationals tasked him to work on starting at the end of last year and leading up to this point were the strikeouts and the hitting lefty pitching. And he's done both of those very well so far. And it's a small sample size, right? It's only 5 games. It's only his first week. The majors catch up with you eventually, as it does with everybody. But he's walked as many times as he has struck out so far, and he has gotten some of his clutch hits off left-handers, which has been big. And those are the 2 things that the Nationals wanted to see from him. He did it in the minors. He's doing it now back in the majors. You know, I watching the game last night, you know, his second plate appearance, he worked the count full and actually was called out on a ball. He took a ball inside. It was clear as day on the broadcast that should have been a ball. It was called a strike, and that's an unfortunate way for that play appearance to end. But to me, that shows, you know, he already has a pretty decent understanding of a major league strike zone. Like, he knew that was a ball, and that was just a bad call by the ump. So seeing that, again, in a small sample size, but seeing him adjust so quickly like this is very impressive. It's obvious why he's the top prospect in the sport. And that he is ready for this moment. He is ready to come up to the majors and make an impact.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the most impressive thing for me, like you've been talking about, has been the eye at the plate. 4 walks already. It could have been 5. When are we going to start seeing him hit for power? And can you talk about, I was reading online about his launch angle. Can you kind of expand on what you've read about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the exit velocities are there, right? Like, even when he was in the minors, his exit velocities were like top, would have been like top in the majors at that point. And he's carried that over this week. You know, his couple of hits have been like 109 miles per hour off the bat, stuff like that, 100 miles per hour plus. So now the trick is getting the ball up in the air for him. And once he starts doing that, that's when we're going to start seeing, you know, these balls to land for doubles, for homers. With his speed, you know, he can even get triples in the gap or, you know, down the line or something like that. But, yeah, the exit velocity isn't a question mark because that power clearly is there. He's smoking the ball. Now it's a question of getting the ball up in the air and trying to do some damage that way. If you've watched these games this past week, yeah, he's making great contact and the ball's coming, you know, flying off his bat, but they're all on the ground, kind of right back up the middle. We've seen him get thrown out a couple of times because the ball basically went right back to the pitcher. So once he's able to start getting the ball up in the air, spraying the ball a little bit to all fields, he's going to be, you know, one of the best hitters, not on this team, but maybe in the game, because he just has all those tools and that eye, like you mentioned, at the plate.
Bobby Blanco with us here on the BetQL Guest Hotline, Nats insider and host for Masson Nationals. Game today against the Cardinals, 4:05 first pitch. Mackenzie Gore on the mound against Lance Lynn. Is that correct? How is he still in the league? Give us a preview of this one.
Yeah, Lance Lynn is still in the league. You know, he's got an ERA under 4 for the Cardinals.
I swear, Bobby, I think I hated him in like 2012. Right? It's like 12 years later.
Yeah, no, he's one of those guys that just feels like he's never going to go away. He's been around for forever. And you're right, you did hit him in 2012. He was still back with the Cardinals back then. And now he's back. But Mackenzie Gore taking the mound, I mean, this is another exciting kind of matchup because you have Lance Lynn, who is a right-hander, so you can kind of expect James to hit near the top of the lineup today. I'm thinking like third again, because as he has been against a couple righties they faced this week. And you have Mackenzie back on the mound, and you've got C.J. Abrams playing shortstop and leading off probably. So that's going to be exciting. That was the major league debut for James on Monday, right? You had all three of those guys on the field at once, you know, and, of course, those were three of the major parts of that Juan Soto trade from a couple of years ago. This is their second time on the field at the same time. James is going to be hitting higher in the order. You figure, you know, a couple games under his belt, he's going to be, you know, a little more comfortable at the plate, like we talked about. So, I don't know, this could be and it's hot out. It's hot out. The ball should be flying. So, you know, this could be a good day for James to get maybe his first, home run or something like that. Another signature moment like he had on Wednesday with Mackenzie on the mound and of course, CJ leading off and playing short.
You know, Bobby, I got to ask you a question here that my dad wanted me to ask. He's such a big Nats fan, watching every game. And, you know, he's been talking to me about, could you imagine if we had Paul Skeens, who was supposed to go to the Washington Nationals and then jump from 2 to number 1, and we've already seen him, you know, making highlights in the big leagues. How good are you expecting Dylan Cruz to be?
Dylan Cruz, very good. I mean, I keep saying this. We get this question a lot now because of how good Paul has been for the Pirates. But Dylan got promoted pretty quickly to AAA. He's playing well right there. He just hit his third home run down there the other night. And he's leading off playing center field for them every day, which is a good sign. I mean, Dylan is still, you know, he's a move up from ranking. Like we talked about, James moving up. Baseball America has him number 1 prospect right now. Dylan is number 4. So he's moving up too. I mean, he was outside of some top 10s at some point earlier this year. Now he's back in the top 5. So, no, Dylan Cruz is definitely still going to be, you know, an all-star caliber type player, maybe not leadoff, but playing center field, can, you know, has all 5 tools just like James does, you know, in a different body form. But yeah, no, Dylan is still going to be a stud in the making, I think. And, there's no real harm in him, you know, not coming up and doing it right away like Paul Skeens. Like Paul Skeens is just, you know, a Strasburg, like, you know, I'm not going to give him on the Strasburg exact mantle, but he has that kind of potential where he's just a little bit different than everybody. And, you know, there's a need for him on the Pirates rotation. There's not really a need for Dylan Cruz to be rushed up to the major leagues right now for the Nationals, because you have Jacob Young, who is right now the best defensive center fielder in the game. You have Lane Thomas, who's one of your better power hitters, and right, and now you have James Wooden left. So there's not really a spot for Dylan Cruz to come up and play right away. And that's what the Nationals want. They want him playing every day, getting at-bats, playing center field, specifically center field too. So, yeah, there's no real harm in it. They're always going to be compared, like, you know, Dylan and Paul Keane, which I get, but, like, it's also not fair to kind of put them on the same, you know, if one guy's on a different path than the other, well, what's wrong with the other guy? Like, I don't think that's really quite fair because it is two different organizations. They do play two completely different positions. I don't think that's fair, but I understand why everyone's kind of questioning where is Dylan Cruz while Paul Skeens is up here in the majors, you know, shoving.
Bobby, before we let you go, is there any injury update with Josiah Gray? I'm starting to get worried that we might not see him this season.
Yeah, I think the Nationals are a little worried too because, yeah, he's been shut down. He had a setback in his recovery, which is a shame because it came in like what probably would have been his last rehab start. You know, he said he did not feel right. His body wasn't responding the way that it had been during earlier in his rehab. So the Nationals have shut him down. He's going to go see a specialist over the All-Star break, get another MRI, see what's going on. But he is, yeah, likely not going to pitch for the Nationals anytime soon. And they're hoping for the best news. Best case scenario, of course, is that nothing structurally is damaged in that right arm, and hopefully it's all muscular, that he can just kind of reset and rest some more, and maybe he'll be back at the later part of the year. But, yeah, that was some unfortunate news earlier this week, and, you know, I think the Nationals are kind of holding their breath, hoping for the best case scenario come the All-Star break.
Bobby, great stuff, man. Really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, thanks, Yawad. Thanks for having me.
Yep, you can check out his work online, Masson Nationals, MassonSports.com, writing for the blog, and also on Twitter at Bobby_Blanco. I'm Adam Epstein. You're listening to AWOD on the Fan. Welcome back. I'm Adam Epstein. You're listening to AWOD Radio here on DC Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan, simulcast on the Team 980 and always available on the Odyssey app. Craig Hoffman will join us at 11 as we'll get his take on training camp, which is just over 3 weeks away for the Washington Commanders and the rest of the NFL. And I was looking through some of the biggest offseason storylines, and I came up with a personal list here of three teams that I think are overrated and three teams I think are underrated heading into training camp 2024 in the National Football League. It's time to discuss the latest news and notes here on NFL Hits.
Every offseason rumor, every free agent on the move, and the drama surrounding the upcoming NFL draft. It's NFL Hits on AWOD Radio.
All right, so we'll start with my list of underrated teams going into training camp. And I'm going to start with a 9-8 team from the AFC.
I'm John Aran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Welcome back. I'm Adam Epstein. You're listening to AWOD Radio. Here on DC Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan, your Washington Nationals will continue their homestand today as they take on the St. Louis Cardinals with a 4:05 first pitch. And joining us right now on the BetQL guest hotline, as sports betting has come to Maryland, don't place that first bet without checking with BetQL because they analyze every game to find you the most profitable betting opportunities. You get 3 free days of BetQL access by downloading the app. On the BetQL guest hotline is Masson Nationals beat reporter Bobby Blanco. What's going on, Bobby?
Morning, AWOD. Thanks for having me. How are you?
Absolutely. Let's get right into it. James Wood made his debut against the Washington Nationals on Monday, and they lose in extras. The next day, they lose in extras. Two wins in a row, and then they lose in extras. What's going on with all this extra inning baseball?
Yeah, the extra innings have not been the Nationals' friend this week. That's three losses in extras. At least last night they got it to the 11th and not the 10th. The 10th had been their enemy earlier this week. Yeah, it's actually been kind of interesting. And I mean, I know the losses aren't fun for anyone, but, you know, you're seeing James Wood come up in big moments in the ninth inning and extra innings, getting on base, you know, one way or the other in these big moments. And you just kind of figure, you know, if someone else other than Luis Garcia Jr., who's been hot this week, can come up with a clutch hit behind him or in front of him even to put him in a position to drive in a run, this team would have, you know, won maybe two or three of those games instead of dropping them. But, yeah, the extra innings have been brutal this week, but it has been fun to see James Wood play in all these games, have success in all these games, and then also, you know, come up in big moments late in games and tight ball games.
So I did predict that James Wood getting called up July 4th weekend would lead to an explosion there in attendance. What has it been like this week?
Yeah, I think attendance has been great. I mean, they usually get good attendance this homestand around this time. You know, the holiday weekend is always a good time. Monday's crowd was really good. I was there Wednesday night. That crowd was really good. You know, even though, you know, you get post-game fireworks, but you get James Wood in the game too. You know, guys, people coming in to see him. This is usually a good time of year for the Nationals, no matter how the team is doing, because what's more American, what's a better way to celebrate the 4th of July than go see a ball game in the nation's capital with the sport's best prospect right now?
No, you're so right about that. And, you know, it's been fun watching the Nats this season, but always cool to see them kind of compete here. And even when they lose in extras, right, you know, it's awesome that they're getting it two extras, and they're getting James Wood an opportunity, like you're saying, in a big spot. And I think the experience that he's getting so early on in his career is going to help him develop quickly. So what have you seen from James Wood so far? How would you kind of grade his first five games in the majors?
Oh, I'm giving him an A for sure. I mean, I think he has done – he's done great. I mean, he is – what I think is the two main things that the Nationals tasked him to work on starting at the end of last year and leading up to this point were the strikeouts and the hitting lefty pitching. And he's done both of those very well so far. And it's a small sample size, right? It's only five games. It's only his first week. The managers catch up with you eventually, as it does with everybody. But he's walked as many times as he has struck out so far, and he has gotten some of his clutch hits off left-handers, which has been big. And those are the two things that the Nationals wanted to see from him. He did it in the minors. He's doing it now back in the majors. You know, I watched in the game last night, you know, his second plate appearance, he worked the count full and actually was called out on a ball. He took a ball inside. It was clear as day on the broadcast that should have been a ball. It was called a strike, and that's an unfortunate way for that play appearance to end. But to me, that shows, you know, he already has a pretty decent understanding of a major league strike zone. Like, he knew that was a ball, and that was just a bad call by the ump. So seeing that, again, in a small sample size, but seeing him adjust so quickly like this is very impressive. It's obvious why he's the top prospect in the sport. And that he is ready for this moment. He is ready to come up to the majors and make an impact.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the most impressive thing for me, like you've been talking about, has been the eye at the plate. Four walks already. It could have been five. When are we going to start seeing him hit for power? And can you talk about, I was reading online about his launch angle. Can you kind of expand on what you've read about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the exit velocities are there, right? Like, even when he was in the minors, his exit velocities were like top, would have been like top in the majors at that point. And he's carried that over this week. You know, his couple of hits have been like 109 miles per hour off the bat, stuff like that, 100 miles per hour plus. So now the trick is getting the ball up in the air for him. And once he starts doing that, that's when we're going to start seeing, you know, these balls to land for doubles, for homers. With his speed, you know, he can even get triples in the gap or, you know, down the line or something like that. But, yeah, the exit velocity isn't a question mark because that power clearly is there. He's smoking the ball. Now it's a question of getting the ball up in the air and trying to do some damage that way. If you've watched these games this past week, yeah, he's making great contact and the ball's coming, you know, flying off his bat, but they're all on the ground, kind of right back up the middle. We've seen him get thrown out a couple of times because the ball basically went right back to the pitcher. So once he's able to start getting the ball up in the air, spraying the ball a little bit to all fields, he's going to be, you know, one of the best hitters, not on this team, but maybe in the game, because he just has all those tools and that eye, like you mentioned, at the plate.
Bobby Blanco with us here on the BetQL Guest Hotline, Nats insider and host for Masson Nationals. Game today against the Cardinals, 4:05 first pitch. Mackenzie Gore on the mound against Lance Lynn. Is that correct? How is he still in the league? Give us a preview of this one.
Yeah, Lance Lynn is still in the league. You know, he's got an ERA under 4 for the Cardinals.
I swear, Bobby, I think I hated him in like 2012. Right? It's like 12 years later.
Yeah, no, he's one of those guys that just feels like he's never going to go away. He's been around for forever. And you're right, you did hit him in 2012. He was still back with the Cardinals back then. And now he's back. But Mackenzie Gore taking the mound, I mean, this is another exciting kind of matchup because you have Lance Lynn, who is a right-hander, so you can kind of expect James to hit near the top of the lineup today. I'm thinking like third again, because as he has been against a couple righties they faced this week. And you have Mackenzie back on the mound, and you've got C.J. Abrams playing shortstop and leading off probably. So that's going to be exciting. That was the major league debut for James on Monday, right? You had all three of those guys on the field at once, you know, and, of course, those were three of the major parts of that Juan Soto trade from a couple of years ago. This is their second time on the field at the same time. James is going to be hitting higher in the order. You figure, you know, a couple games under his belt, he's going to be, you know, a little more comfortable at the plate, like we talked about. So, I don't know, this could be and it's hot out. It's hot out. The ball should be flying. So, you know, this could be a good day for James to get maybe his first, you know, a home run or something like that. Another signature moment like he had on Wednesday with Mackenzie on the mound and of course, CJ leading off and playing short.
You know, Bobby, I got to ask you a question here that my dad wanted me to ask. He's such a big Nats fan, watching every game. And, you know, he's been talking to me about, could you imagine if we had Paul Skeens, who was supposed to go to the Washington Nationals and then jump from 2 to number 1, and we've already seen him, you know, making highlights in the big leagues. How good are you expecting Dylan Cruz to be?
Dylan Cruz, very good. I mean, I keep saying this. You know, we get this question a lot now because of how good Paul has been for the Pirates. But Dylan got promoted pretty quickly to AAA. He's playing well right there. He just hit his third home run down there the other night. And he's leading off playing center field for them every day, which is a good sign. I mean, Dylan is still, you know, he's a move up from ranking. Like we talked about, James moving up. Baseball America has him number 1 prospect right now. Dylan is number 4. So he's moving up too. I mean, he was outside of some top 10s at some point earlier this year. Now he's back in the top 5. So, no, Dylan Cruz is definitely still going to be, you know, an all-star caliber type player, maybe not leadoff, but playing center field, can, you know, has all 5 tools just like James does, you know, in a different body form. But yeah, no, Dylan is still going to be a stud in the making, I think. And, you know, there's no real harm in him, you know, not coming up and doing it right away like Paul Skeens. Like Paul Skeens is just, you know, a Strasburg, like, you know, I'm not going to give him on the Strasburg exact mantle, but he has that kind of potential where he's just a little bit different than everybody. And, you know, there's a need for him on the Pirates rotation. There's not really a need for Dylan Cruz to be rushed up to the major leagues right now for the Nationals, because you have Jacob Young, who is right now the best defensive center fielder in the game. You have Lane Thomas, who's one of your better power hitters, and right now you have James Wooden left. So there's not really a spot for Dylan Cruz to come up and play right away. And that's what the Nationals want. They want him playing every day, getting at-bats, playing center field, specifically center field too. So, yeah, there's no real harm. And they're always going to be compared, like, you know, Dylan and Paul Skeens, which I get. But, like, it's also not fair to kind of put them on the same. You know, if one guy's on a different path than the other, well, what's wrong with the other guy? Like, I don't think that's really quite fair, because it is 2 different organizations. They do play 2 completely different positions. So, yeah, no, I don't think that's fair. But I understand why everyone's kind of questioning where is Dylan Cruz while Paul Skeens is up here in the majors, you know, shoving.
Bobby, before we let you go, is there any injury update with Josiah Gray? I'm starting to get worried that we might not see him this season.
Yeah, I think the Nationals are a little worried too, because, yeah, he's been shut down. He had a setback in his recovery, which is a shame, because it came in like what probably would have been his last rehab start. You know, he said he did not feel right. His body wasn't responding the way that it had been during earlier in his rehab. So the Nationals have shut him down. He's going to go see a specialist over the All-Star break, get another MRI, see what's going on. But he is, likely not going to pitch for the Nationals anytime soon. And they're hoping for the best news. Best case scenario, of course, is that nothing structurally is damaged in that right arm, and hopefully it's all muscular, that he can just kind of reset and rest some more, and maybe he'll be back at the later part of the year. But, yeah, that was some unfortunate news earlier this week, and, you know, I think the Nationals are kind of holding their breath, hoping for the best-case scenario come the All-Star break.
Bobby, great stuff, man. Really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, thanks, Yawad. Thanks for having me.
Yep, you can check out his work online, Masson Nationals, MassonSports.com, writing for the blog, and also on Twitter at Bobby_Blanco. I'm Adam Epstein. You're listening to AWOD on the Fan. Welcome back. I'm Adam Epstein. You're listening to AWOD Radio here on DC Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan, simulcast on the Team 980 and always available on the Odyssey app. Craig Hoffman will join us at 11 as we'll get his take on training camp, which is just over 3 weeks away for the Washington Commanders and the rest of the NFL. And I was looking through some of the biggest offseason storylines, and I came up with a personal list here of three teams that I think are overrated and three teams I think are underrated heading into training camp 2024 in the National Football League. It's time to discuss the latest news and notes here on NFL Hits.
Every offseason rumor, every free agent on the move, and the drama surrounding the upcoming NFL draft. It's NFL Hits on AWOD Radio.
All right, so we'll start with my list of underrated teams going into training camp. And I'm going to start with a 9-8 team from the AFC. In fact, a 9-8 team that finished last place in their own division. But one thing they've got going for them is their quarterback is now healthy. Now, they are in arguably the toughest division in football. And I've heard some people say that all four of these teams could make the postseason, as last year, almost all four teams in this division made the postseason. My first underrated team is the Cincinnati Bengals. 9-8 last year with Joe Burrow being injured and missing part of the season. And I look at that depth chart and it wows me, right? And so, yes, they are missing their running back from last year. They're going to have Zach Moss, Chase Brown, Trayvon Williams. It's going to be a few guys there. But at wide receiver, it's still Jamar Chase. They re-sign T. Higgins. They've got Mike Gesicki at tight end. And they've made a few improvements at offensive line. If Joe Burrow's healthy, that offense is going to be awesome. And then defensively, I like what they've got going as well with a few playmakers. And so I get it. This is a really tough division in the AFC North. And it feels like Super Bowl or bust for the Ravens, right? And it feels like for Cleveland, this is Deshaun Watson's last chance there for the Browns, or they could move past him and with Joe Flacco having success last year. In Pittsburgh, we really don't know what's going to happen with their quarterback battle, Justin Fields versus Russell Wilson. But I'm telling you, I think the Cincinnati Bengals are underrated, and I'm not going to bet on them to win the division, but I did already place a bet on the Bengals to make the playoffs at plus money. I really like that. What do you think of that, Donald?
Yeah, I like that a lot, especially the Joe Burrow argument. I think because of his injury, they've been kind of forgotten about in the division they play in. There's a lot of other star power there. So I think they're kind of like the brother that's been left over in the corner kind of thing and forgotten about. So I like that a lot.
Speaking of the brother that's been forgotten about, we'll talk about the Harbaugh brother. That's my second underrated team. Not the Ravens coach, but the new coach of the L.A. Chargers. And I had to literally pull up the schedule from last year because, Donald, it's almost like it's laughable how many games Brandon Staley blew last year because he's a terrible coach. All right? Think about this. This is a team, a Chargers team, that finished last place in the AFC West. All right? Last place in their division with a 5-12 record. All right? A 5-12 record. 12 losses last year. Let's count how many of those losses should have been wins with a better coach. They lose week one to the Dolphins 36-34. They had the lead for most of that game. All right? So that's a 6-win team. They lost in overtime to the Titans 27-24. Now they're a 7-win team. They lost to the Dallas Cowboys 20-17. Now they're an 8-win team. They lost to Detroit 41-38 by 3 in a shootout. Now they're a 9-win team. They lost to the Packers by 3. Now they're a 10-win team, right? They lose to Buffalo 24-22. Now they're an 11-win team. They lose to the Chiefs the final week of the season 13-12. Now they're a 12-win team. I think they're going to be an 11 or 12-win team. I'm guaranteeing that Harbaugh wins double-digit games in his first season as the coach of the Chargers because they're just too talented, and their dumb coach last year would go for it on fourth down on their side of the ball, and he was stupid following all the analytics, and he botched so many games. Most underrated team in that division, in my mind, is the Chargers. They're not going to beat the Chiefs and win that division. I guarantee you they have a better record than the Broncos and the Raiders. That's a double-digit wins for my underrated team, the Chargers. You like that, Donald?
Yeah, so the only points I would make on my side is just I'm just interested to see with the departure of some of their key pieces like Keenan Allen, Austin Eckler coming to us, yeah. Mike Williams. So, you know, they've lost some pieces over there, so I'm just interested to see if Harbaugh can rally the troops and get it done.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be some younger players there making catches for them. I do like Josh Palmer, though, as a wide receiver. He's just 24, a young guy who I expect to have a big season for the Chargers. My final underrated team, I'm going to go with the Philadelphia Eagles. I just – Saquon, all right, if he stays healthy, that's a big difference there. But this is an Eagles team that just really struggled during the final stretch run of the season. And everyone blamed their coach, Nick Sirianni. And maybe that's the case. And maybe he stinks this year and loses his job. I just think there's way too much talent on that Eagles team. The NFC East never has back-to-back champions. It's not going to be the Cowboys. I think the Eagles win the division. They win 11 games. Jalen Hurts isn't hurt this season. He plays healthy. You're going to see A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith be awesome. Saquon with that team as well. And then I think they're going to be much better on the defensive side of the ball. You know, Jalen Carter, N'Kobe Dean, a few of the guys that they got, and their returning players as well. I've got the Eagles winning the division. So those are my three underrated teams. I'll throw my three overrated real quick. Broncos overrated. Me and my producer have a running bit. We think that Sean Payton will be the first head coach fired this season. You got any comments on that, Donald? Out on the Broncos. No chance that it works out with Bo Nix.
Yeah. I don't have a lot of... Yeah, I'll just keep it short. I agree with you.
overrated? I'm going to go New York Jets here. 6 primetime games is a lot for a team that didn't win many games last year. Oh, but Aaron Rodgers is healthy. Is he going to stay healthy? I have my doubts. And then my final overrated team, I'm going to go with the Green Bay Packers. I think that's Detroit's division. I think Detroit wins that division. I think Detroit is ready to compete for a Super Bowl. I think Green Bay got hot with Jordan Love, and they've got some interesting pieces there at wide receiver, Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs. Josh Jacobs now at running back. I don't know that their defense is going to be as good. It feels like it's getting old. And so I think that the Packers overachieved last year. I think they take a step back this season. Those are my three teams I believe will overachieve and three teams I believe will underachieve. AWOD's overrated and underrated NFL teams headed into training camp. If you want to chime in, phone lines are open. That's 1-800-636-1067. 1-800-636-1067. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Adam Epstein. You're listening to AWOD Radio here on DC Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan. Simulcast on the Team 980 and always available on the Odyssey app. Craig Hoffman will join us at 11 as we'll get his take on training camp, which is just over 3 weeks away for the Washington Commanders and the rest of the NFL. And I was looking through some of the biggest offseason storylines, and I came up with a personal list here of three teams that I think are overrated and three teams I think are underrated heading into training camp 2024 in the National Football League. It's time to discuss the latest news and notes here on NFL Hits.
Every offseason rumor, every free agent on the move, and the drama surrounding the upcoming NFL draft. It's NFL Hits on AWOD Radio.
All right, so we'll start with my list of underrated teams going into training camp. And I'm going to start with a 9-8 team from the AFC. In fact, a 9-8 team that finished last place in their own division. But one thing they've got going for them is their quarterback is now healthy. Now, they are in arguably the toughest division in football. And I've heard some people say that all four of these teams could make the postseason. As last year, almost all four teams in this division made the postseason. My first underrated team is the Cincinnati Bengals. 9-8 last year with Joe Burrow being injured and missing part of the season. And I look at that depth chart and it wows me, right? And so, yes, they are missing their running back from last year. They're going to have Zach Moss, Chase Brown, Trayvon Williams. It's going to be a few guys there. But at wide receiver, it's still Ja'Marr Chase. They re-sign T. Higgins. They've got Mike Gesicki at tight end. They've made a few improvements at offensive line. If Joe Burrow's healthy, that offense is going to be awesome. And then defensively, I like what they've got going as well with a few playmakers. And so I get it. This is a really tough division in the AFC North. And it feels like Super Bowl or bust for the Ravens, right? And it feels like for Cleveland, this is Deshaun Watson's last chance there for the Browns, or they could move past him and with Joe Flacco having success last year. In Pittsburgh, we really don't know what's going to happen with their quarterback battle, Justin Fields versus Russell Wilson. But I'm telling you, I think the Cincinnati Bengals are underrated, and I'm not going to bet on them to win the division, but I did already place a bet on the Bengals to make the playoffs at plus money. I really like that. What do you think of that, Donald?
Yeah, I like that a lot, especially the Joe Burrow argument. I think because of his injury, they've been kind of forgotten about in the division they play in. There's a lot of other star power there. So I think they're kind of like the brother that's been left over in the corner kind of thing and forgotten about. So I like that a lot.
Speaking of the brother that's been forgotten about, we'll talk about the Harbaugh brother. That's my second underrated team. Not the Ravens coach, but the new coach of the L.A. Chargers. And I had to literally pull up the schedule from last year because, Donald, it's almost like it's laughable how many games Brandon Staley blew last year because he's a terrible coach. All right? Think about this. This is a team, a Chargers team, that finished last place in the AFC West. All right, last place in their division with a 5-12 record. All right, a 5-12 record. 12 losses last year. Let's count how many of those losses should have been wins with a better coach. They lose week one to the Dolphins 36-34. They had the lead for most of that game. All right, so that's a 6-win team. They lost in overtime to the Titans 27-24. Now they're a 7-win team. They lost to the Dallas Cowboys 20-17. Now they're an 8-win team. They lost to Detroit 41-38 by 3 in a shootout. Now they're a 9-win team. They lost to the Packers by 3. Now they're a 10-win team, right? They lose to Buffalo 24-22. Now they're an 11-win team. They lose to the Chiefs the final week of the season 13-12. Now they're a 12-win team. I think they're going to be an 11- or 12-win team. I'm guaranteeing that Harbaugh wins double-digit games in his first season as the coach of the Chargers because they're just too talented, and their dumb coach last year would go for it on fourth down on their side of the ball, and he was stupid following all the analytics, and he botched so many games. Most underrated team in that division, in my mind, is the Chargers. They're not going to beat the Chiefs and win that division. I guarantee you they have a better record than the Broncos and the Raiders. That's a double-digit wins for my underrated team, the Chargers. You like that, Donald?
Yeah, so the only points I would make on my side is just I'm just interested to see with the departure of some of their key pieces like Keenan Allen, Austin Eckler coming to us, yeah. Mike Williams. So, you know, they've lost some pieces over there, so I'm just interested to see if Harbaugh can rally the troops and get it done.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be some younger players there making catches for them. I do like Josh Palmer, though, as a wide receiver. He's just 24, a young guy who I expect to have a big season for the Chargers. My final underrated team, I'm going to go with the Philadelphia Eagles. I just Saquon, all right, if he stays healthy, that's a big difference there. But this is an Eagles team that just really struggled during the stretch, final stretch run of the season. And everyone blamed their coach, Nick Sirianni. And maybe that's the case. And maybe he stinks this year and loses his job. I just think there's way too much talent on that Eagles team. The NFC East never has back-to-back champions. It's not going to be the Cowboys. I think the Eagles win the division. They win 11 games. Jalen Hurts isn't hurt this season. He plays healthy. You're going to see A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith be awesome. Saquon with that team as well. And then I think they're going to be much better on the defensive side of the ball. You know, Jalen Carter, N'Kobe Dean, a few of the guys that they got, and their returning players as well. I've got the Eagles winning the division. So those are my three underrated teams. I'll throw my three overrated real quick. Broncos overrated. Me and my producer have a running bit. We think that Sean Payton will be the first head coach fired this season. You got any comments on that, Donald? Out on the Broncos. No chance that it works out with Bo Nix.
Yeah. I don't have a lot of... Yeah, I'll just keep it short. I agree with you.
overrated? I'm going to go New York Jets here. Six primetime games is a lot for a team that didn't win many games last year. Oh, but Aaron Rodgers is healthy. Is he going to stay healthy? I have my doubts. And then my final overrated team, I'm going to go with the Green Bay Packers. I think that's Detroit's division. I think Detroit wins that division. I think Detroit is ready to compete for a Super Bowl. I think Green Bay got hot with Jordan Love, and they've got some interesting pieces there at wide receiver, Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs. Josh Jacobs now at running back. I don't know that their defense is going to be as good. It feels like it's getting old. And so I think that the Packers overachieved last year. I think they take a step back this season. Those are my three teams I believe will overachieve and three teams I believe will underachieve. AWOD's overrated and underrated NFL teams headed into training camp. If you want to chime in, phone lines are open. That's 1-800-636-1067. 1-800-636-1067. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.